Talking with fellow St. Louisan Stephen Slutsky today, founder of Mobile Workflow. We've known each other for a bit now, and I invited him on to talk about his journey. He originally started off in the aerospace industry and, like many entrepreneurs, didn't plan on being a business owner. He sort of just fell into it. Turns out we have that in common. From working at NASA and McDonnell Douglas to now serving multiple companies with a customizable compliance platform that he created, he's finding new ways to both impact people's lives and continue learning about himself. It's been a wild 20 years for Stephen, so get ready to learn his advice for both beginning and seasoned entrepreneurs. When you're ready to talk with Stephen about how to make sure your large company is keeping compliant so you can save millions of dollars annually, find him at mworkflow.com or on LinkedIn. Keep listening for more. Stephen, this is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me?
Hey. Nice.
I've been waiting all month for that joke, man. I'm like, I hope he forgot because I'm gonna use it. How's it going, man? How you been?
I'm doing good. Awesome. Just moved my daughter out to ASU to start her first semester of school after she deferred. So it's an interesting week.
It is an interesting week, right? Yes. You know, when isn't it though? Life is just full of changes, like inside and outside. So I guess if you're living the life correctly, you're never going to get a break until you're dead. And such is the entrepreneurial walk, man. I'm sorry to say it.
Exactly. So yeah, talk about like big changes. So, and it's everything you like, right? It's everything you work for. I worked hard to make it so my daughter can get out to school and be independent.
Yeah.
And then when she leaves, I'm like, damn, I did a good job.
Yeah.
Now I'm depressed. Yeah. But it's all good. It's all good. It gets better. It's all, I know I accomplished something here. So,
man.
So I get it. So yeah.
The first time you feel that sort of feeling is like when they're riding a bicycle and you let go of the seat and they just keep going. And it's like, oh man, there they go. And then the next time you feel it, they're at college. And it's, I'm not trying to make you feel old. Like there's been a lot of life lived between then and now, right? There are distinct chapter closes in our lives that just really, they really hit the spot. I'm actually pretty an emotional guy, man. I'm going to start crying on this podcast. I don't want to. So
Actually, now I have a new goal.
Yeah. Shoot, man. What's your new goal? What is it?
It's trying to get you to tear up during this podcast.
Crap. I just opened myself up to that, right? I just told you my kryptonite, man. Okay. Well, I just got to hold out for another 20 minutes or so. I think I can handle it. Well, so what's your company do, man?
So, So I've been working with large organizations to help them improve their environmental health and safety outcomes. I've been working with some really large ones. My biggest client's been the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud that they've been using my software to conduct their compliance audits throughout the VA for the last, 15 years. No, it's more than that, 18 years. I've actually been working with them for 23 years since my son was born. So I'm really proud to be able to help them. And I think they've gotten some really good value out of it. So basically what happens is organizations have to know whether or not they comply with regulatory requirements, mm-hmm, around environmental health and safety. I work with them my software helps provide them the tool to do their audits, conduct their audits, analyze and assess where they stand, and then start to make plans to have better health and safety outcomes. I do the same thing with a large chemical company. They have their organization is throughout the Americas. It's a pretty rewarding thing. It's been a very rewarding thing. And it helps me build on my software background as well. So yeah. I come to this as a geek entering into the safe environmental health and safety realm. So
very cool. Very cool. Well, I've known that you're a geek for a while. I think, you know, we're kind of like Highlanders, right? You can just see him from across the room. You're like, that guy is a huge geek. I can just tell. And then when I met you formally, I'm like, I was right, you know, but unlike that, we don't have to like fight until one of us beheads the other. We're in different areas though. We're in two different sectors. So, but it sounds like you do some pretty like high level, I'll say nerd stuff, right? When it comes to compliance, like I used to work in the finance industry. There's compliance out the wazoo. It's like, there's no one person in this entire company that knows all of the rules. Like, how do you grapple all that? How do you keep all that in your head?
So, yeah. And so I've definitely seen that. So one of the big challenges is, especially for like an organization like the VA, is the number of regulatory requirements they have to deal with. And being able to work through and share their best practices throughout the organization and know and leverage the knowledge base that they have. There are a lot of smaller organizations that have the same requirements, but don't have the amount of data, say, that a VA has, because they have so much experience at such a wide variety of facilities. Some VAs, like the Los Angeles VA, it's like a small city. I mean, they have a movie theater. It's amazing. So they're very large facilities, but that gives them a breadth of issues that they may have come across over time. And so the key challenge is to help them communicate their experiences. And the way I've always looked at it is, we have a lot of subjective content, a lot of things. They go out, they see stuff, they have a feeling, they're like, hey, I think this is this. I think it applies to this regulatory requirement. And then you have to be able to take that subjective content and turn it into some kind of objective content that is referenceable, trackable, and gives you the ability to build the metrics you need and get the knowledge base you need. So, and everybody goes out, and especially in the way the VA works, they do very much exception-based audits. So they're going on site. They have very experienced, a huge auditing force that goes out, and they know what they need to comply with in their areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll come across things in other areas. For example, a fire safety engineer will see a lot of fire safety things, and maybe not as many industrial hygiene issues as they're going out. And some of these teams are pretty big, but since they have this knowledge base within the VA, how do you exchange that, and how do you kind of indicate what things outside of your specific area? And there are some more generalists that are out there too, but you know, everyone has their own specialty that they like to work in. So how do you exchange that knowledge? That's been something we've been successful at by helping. And I have my previous life in software. I had a very large knowledge management background.
Okay.
I was working in document imaging. That turned into a lot more knowledge management and being able to put structure around unstructured content. That's a really important part of all this. And that helps you to relate things. So as you're going through, and say you're going out and you're auditing and you have a finding. And if one engineer identifies something that they see in their assessment, and then another engineer at another facility identifies the same thing, mm-hmm. if those aren't accurately tagged, it's basically you start to lose statistical significance.
Right.
So it's impossible to know that you have a problem because you have this unrelated thing and it's kind of an outlier now. So that's something that we've worked hard to do during our assessments. And I'm really lucky that I have the background that I did in working in the imaging and document management, and then on that knowledge management side to kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. And it's been really rewarding to work with all these other professionals in the field, understand what they need, understand how they work, and then help them, give them the tools and provide them the things they need to be able to add value. And that's, again, that's my main goal. I always look at all my clients and say, how can I make their careers better? How can I make the people I work with better and give them more opportunities? And
yeah,
that's been something really good about, you know, working in software.
Nice.
And again, you know, my engineering background, so I never expected to do that. So, and I can talk more on that after. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, there is something really special when you realize what you're doing is a calling, right? You know, you've got a unique situation where you're able to directly help the livelihoods of individual people by helping a company as a whole. And, you know, I don't have that same document management background, but I have seen both sides of the coin, not in terms of compliance and stuff, but just managing things like a wiki. You know, like if you've got a company wiki, it's like a company, everybody seems to have to know everything about the company in order to do their job. And it's like, that just causes analysis paralysis, man. Nobody knows everything about a particular company. But giving them the opportunity to, hey, here's what I saw happen here, and I'm categorizing it as this. And as you said, when it's categorized properly, then that turns into data that the company as a whole can make some decisions about. Okay, well, we keep seeing this problem, so let's do something about it, instead of just, you know, water cooler talk, like can't believe what the crap. And that doesn't help things. You know, if you have a unified system to put that into, then it helps a lot better. I mean with your background, I mean, is that why you decided to start the company up? You were doing that kind of thing before and you're like, I can do this myself, and then you just started it up? Or what's the story behind that?
Absolutely not. So it was actually a very interesting thing. So first of all, and I alluded to this, my background is aerospace engineering. Mm-hmm. I started in that. I was working at McDonnell Douglas back in the day. So I'm an ex-rocket scientist, and I'm reformed. And I got into software. The aerospace industry was very interesting through the late 90s or the early 90s, mid 90s, and wasn't quite where I wanted to be. So I ended up in software. I was working for another organization. That's when I started my work with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I was a software developer. I started off way back in the day in Fortran, writing Fortran, and then got into actually doing business software development. And then in 2002, during all of the upheaval in the software industry and the dot-com bust, the company I was working with basically went out of business. It was, and as it was going out of business, I already had this great relationship with the VA. And I'd started off with the VA working on material safety data sheets. Eventually, and I had a great relationship with them. They had another opportunity that went into the environmental health and safety side. And my company had delivered a preliminary, a solution to them to help them with these audits. Mm-hmm. Never really grew it. It was kind of a small thought, I hadn't been, I had been working on other things at the time, so I wasn't directly involved in it at the time. But when the company blew up in 2002, I was told in my, basically my exit interview, which was a week before the company went out of business. And they said, hey, the VA is not core to our business. You can keep talking to them. You can take on that business. And, so that was a good thing. At the time I went in, I knew what was going to happen because I had pretty tight relationships with corporate. I mean, the same day I got let go, the president of the company was let go. And so I knew everything. I knew the wheels were coming off. I knew they weren't going to close well. I knew that a lot of systems would just disappear if people weren't proactive. And so what I actually did, and I had primed my relationship with our networking team by liquoring them up through the years. So they were more than happy to help me out. And I went back in and I took all of the system that they developed for the VA and all the systems. And I basically just burned my CDs. They were CDs at the time. There weren't DVDs. So it's early 2000. Burned it to CDs and contacted them. And I said, look, the company's going under. Here's everything you've got. Here are your systems. Put them into a FedEx box and send them to the VA. And because of my relationship with the VA, I was able to basically within 2 weeks of being let go, I had a 2-year deal, maintenance deal with the VA to maintain the system they had. And then during that summer, I actually did a study for the VA on really turning it into an organization-wide system. And a web-based system rather than, it was a desktop system at the time, not very expandable. And we pushed it along. And that's really how I got started on the EHS side, is taking over the system, but then coming up with a vision for the VA that was web-based. And it was a mixture, it was a hybrid. It was a web-based and desktop-based where they would go on site. We actually had a handheld version of the software early on, and it was in use for a while at the VA. It was pretty successful. However, once some laptops started getting stolen, the VA stepped back and stopped doing desktop solutions. They really, you couldn't even install anything on their desktops or have the handheld. So basically, we moved to all web-based at the time. So it was kind of just like a growing experience. I, you know, starting off as a rocket scientist back at, you know, worked at NASA, I worked at McDonnell Douglas, I was working on the Harpoon missile, I was working on the F-15, and then I totally about faced, moved into software and started developing systems. I got addicted to that. I really like the fact that you can roll systems and actually get something done in 6 months rather than 5 years and have the program just get canceled because it takes so long to build an aircraft or get something to happen. So, having done that and moving into it, then all of a sudden in 2002, I became an entrepreneur and I had a great run-in, right? Because I started it off and I had clients. Mm-hmm. I had another company that I'd been working with at the time that I did the same thing with their software. And basically sitting at my desk after I got let go, sent an email to my contact at that company and received an email back while I was packing up my stuff, basically saying, call me Monday. So I knew I was rolling at that point. And suddenly I'm like, wow, I'm an entrepreneur. So it wasn't like I was only going for this. So
I love it. You know, I have talked with so many people. I can't talk today. It's cold out here in this truck, man. I have talked with so many folks about how they started, and probably like 80% of them are just like, it was an accident, just sort of happened. And it's like, same, bro. I mean, you know, you get on the path and then you look down and you're like, oh, I guess I'm a business owner now. So here we are. Here we are.
Yeah. And with its challenges, but it's an addiction, right? It's
right.
It's like we shot it up into our veins. Like, what the heck happened? I never expected it.
Man, dopamine is a heck of a drug. Well, you mentioned challenges. Like, what have been some of the major challenges you've overcome on the journey? Can you share?
I've had different partners working with me in the business in the past. And one big challenge we had was finding out that one of our partners wasn't quite the human being that we thought he was going to be.
Was he a lizard? Was he a lizard?
He was. Oh, I don't know. Lizard might be, you know, too nice, but I'm not going to say what I think he is. What I realized during that, I mean, we made a huge mistake in how we had structured our agreement with this person. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to say gentleman because I don't think that. But how we structured our agreement, and he really took us to the cleaners, and it cost us money. I had another partner at the time, so I like to say, I've had three divorces in my life, two business and one marriage. Mm-hmm. Only one of them was adversarial and not good. That was this one. But the thing I realized, and then I started talking to other business owners, is that everybody makes so many business owners. I can't say everybody, but I think most make some really stupid decision that they have to learn from. Mm-hmm. And I learned. I learned the value of what I had. I learned how not to partner with somebody.
Yeah.
I'm very leery of, you know, I mean, and it goes back to everything. I mean, partnerships are very difficult. You have to really look at how you handle it. And one of the things I realized is two things kill partnerships. And one is failure, like the company fails, mm-hmm. But the other is success. So you need to negotiate early on in your relationship while you still love each other, go back to the marriage thing, how you want to treat each other in the event that you don't see eye to eye anymore. Well, it sucks to try to do that at the time you don't see eye to eye. But when you love each other, you go, oh, well, I want to take care of you this way because I care about you. I don't want you to, you know, I mean, I think it's important to look at that and have really solid operating agreements, really solid decisions on how you're going to work together in your partnership. How are you going to share success? How are you going to share failure? How are you going to share tough times and how are you going to share good times? And I've seen it happen at other companies where success starts happening and then one of the partners feels that they are owed more than the other partner because somehow or another they did something that was so far superior to what the other partner did and that they need to have more hand in the relationship, to go to a Seinfeld reference. But you really got to know ahead of time. And so while it felt horrible, it was an extremely traumatic experience while we were going through it. I mean, hell, we ended up not in court, but in an arbitrator's room while you're sitting across the desk from this person that you don't think is really a good human being. And you have to have a discussion with them. And you want to jump up and say, what I'm not going to say on this podcast, and say all these things and just scream and yell. And yet somehow or another, you just gotta fight through it. I mean, it, thankfully for us, it was only 11 hours of excruciating negotiations sitting in the room with them.
Only 11 hours.
I mean, yeah, it was a really difficult, long 11 hours. But the, you know, afterwards, you, all these things, you know, and it's so cliche, but everything you go through makes you stronger and smarter. So you can either just say, oh, the hell with it, I'm done. Or yeah, you can say, I got to learn from this and I got to let this not happen again. However, I got to be able to work with people and I need to be able to trust people. So how when someone breaks trust with you in a huge way, do you start trusting people again and be able to work with them? Well, you got to try to learn valuable lessons. And so, I another just a roadblock in the entrepreneurial path. You know, so I'd say that of the biggest events, that was the most traumatic.
It sounds like it. And I mean, that's, it's easy for us to kind of be trigger shy. And I'm saying this from experience too. I'm not like ivory tower, like, well, this is a problem Steven has, but not me. I mean, I've had my trust broken before. I've had bad clients and it's made me scared to ask for a sale or have a conversation or want to work with other people that want to collaborate. And it sounds like you've come to the same conclusion where I have as well. And it ends up being the, let's see how to put this. It's just data. It's just information, which is cool because I know you're a huge nerd. You're a data nerd just like me.
Yeah.
But treating this less as an event and less like a, oh, this happened to me type of thing and take it personal, then we end up seeing, okay, this happened, but this is information. We end up kind of isolating ourselves and just kind of have, you know, it's out there, it happened, this is a thing, but what can we take from this? And it's freaking difficult because we're humans driven largely by emotion, right? It's hard to call up that logical part of our brain and say, okay, well, what can I take away from this? Like, what does this mean? Do I need to update my process? Because there have been times I'm sure you felt, I mean, it sounds like you felt the same way where you take it really, really hard and it's like, oh, I suck. It's like, no, you don't suck. It's just, it's a thing that happens. And there's all kinds of people out there. You can trust again, Steven.
I know.
I know you can. I believe in you, brother.
I trust you, man. I trust you. I love you, man.
Don't trust me, dude. I'm joking.
Don't
trust me.
I didn't want to say that on the podcast. So.
Oh, man, I've got a leak.
Sully your reputation. But, man. You know, but it really, I mean, like, as you're saying it, and I'm trying to, like, you know, think back, it's the same thing in the business that I'm in, and in this environmental health and safety field. Like, there are people, and I've talked to them, and they've gone through these having an incident when you're a safety manager or working in the industry can be super traumatic. I mean, people can die. They can get hurt bad. And it's a traumatic, it's an injury, right? Happens to your brain. But then what they invariably end up doing because of their commitment is they step back, try to learn from their mistakes, try to figure out how to make things better. And that's kind of where, I mean, this goes to my motivations in a lot of what I do. This goes to, like, hey, if I can provide them tools to assess that, look at it, come up with what went wrong, and then fix it. Don't let it happen again. They don't want that feeling. I don't want that feeling. Same thing I did. I didn't want that feeling. I got an attorney to redraft our information. I still had a partner at the time, another partner at the time. And the two of us, we had to get through it. We had to work through it. It was a really hard hit. But we figured out a way through it. We were very successful working together for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. We are not partners anymore. Just he just decided to go his way and I went mine. But that was very amicable. Yeah. It was the same thing as it was my year of divorce. So I went through my divorce from my partner and my divorce from my wife at the same time. Yeah. So that was a really interesting period. My friend asked me if I was going to get a sex change, because then he said everything would be different. But I told him maybe I am not going to do that. So we just learn and we figure out how to move forward. So
that's awesome, though. I got to wonder, what level of friendship do you have to be at to ask a dude that, like, hey, man, just between us buds, you ever think about getting a sex change? Like, what?
Yeah, right. It was pretty funny. I really appreciated it. So I thought that was hysterical. So.
Shoot, man. Shoot. Well, as I get to know you better, I know your sense of humor. I think it's somewhat similar to mine. I think there's like some 30% overlap. I'm figuring you out more. And I'm like, hey, Steven's a cool guy. I like hanging out with you. We'll have to do that some more sometime.
Frisbee golf.
There we go. I wanted to do that back when it was warm and things were like just stupid busy and it's cold and then COVID and then election and then blah, 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 blah. And then, the U.S. is coming apart at the seams. So, you know, once the country like destroys itself and out of the ashes, we'll play some frisbee golf. Okay.
It'll be some more challenging courses. Think about that.
There we are. It's like stuff on fire. It's like, hey, fire hazard is 7 strokes. Melting my frisbee, man. What do I got to do? I got to play it where it lies. I'm sorry. I love it.
The thermals is going to play havoc with the frisbee. So.
Oh, man. No joke. Well, so do you have any sage advice for people if they're just starting out on their entrepreneurial journey or if they've been on it for like 20 years like you have? Like, what kind of advice could you give them?
Be agile. We learned that this year, right? Everything's changing constantly.
Yeah, constantly.
Like constantly moving, constantly jumping around. There's so many ups and downs in being an entrepreneur. I know for sure that I was extremely blessed and very fortunate that I was able to start off at a sprint in my company. I mean, I was making money from the beginning and most people don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a climb. It's going to be an uphill battle more than likely. And you just got to stick with it. Cause try to learn as you go along. Don't beat yourself up when you make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. It's inevitable. I don't know who was born or came out of school or in this world that's like, oh, I know everything I need to know to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to be perfect.
Nope.
Heck, I mean, I was just an engineer. I was a software geek and an engineer who never expected to be doing this. And I have learned through it. And so it's going to be a learning experience. But is it rewarding? Yeah, it's rewarding.
It is.
And I had no idea, none. Like, you know, when I was in school, I was gonna work behind a desk at McDonnell Douglas designing airplanes forever. And all of a sudden I'm working with all these different people and all these different businesses and really serving them and providing value to them. And I didn't realize at the time how rewarding that was going to be. Mm-hmm. And honestly, as big a geek as I am, my favorite part is people. Very favorite part is working with people and empathizing, finding their challenges, helping them succeed and helping them move along. Because at the end of the day, it's ones and zeros that we're working in. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable sitting there. It's always a pull, right? I like being a geek. But I also just love working with people and finding out what their issues are. I mean, as difficult as tech support can be, because we're geeks, we know how to run all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there and they're asking you a question. You're like, how is this person not understand this? But then you step back and you look at it and you go, I understand why they don't understand it. They're not me. So, you know, so I like trying to guide them through that. My parents give me ample opportunity to be better at technical support. So,
yeah,
you know,
lots of practice, man. You know,
yeah, Dad, click here.
So. Let's do the thing. No, it amazes me the more that I get to know you. I mean, I already knew we had a lot in common as far as, you know, what our original plans were and what they are now. And when you were talking about how you just planned on being behind a desk and just make money and just build airplanes and just do the thing, and now you're a business owner. I'm like, man, that sounds exactly like, I never thought that I would be owning a business. Dude, what the heck are we? Seriously, like, we...
crazy?
Like, what am I? Well, yeah, definitely. You gotta have a lot of crazy mixed in there. I mean, we basically... we're building something out of nothing. That's essentially what an entrepreneur is. You know, we're making something out of nothing. We're pushing, we're basically sticking a finger in the eye of the universe and saying, you know, fight me. I'm doing this. You should try to stop me. Right. But man, it's awesome that you're doing what you're doing. You've been in business longer than me. So when I say I'm going to be you in 15 years, that's what I mean. Cause I've been in business for 5. I'm not saying you're like 20 years older than me. But I mean, I'm going to be you when I grow up, probably, or at least some variant of it. Well, it's been awesome chatting. Well, it's been awesome chatting with you today, man. How would people find you? Like, if they wanted to reach out and be like, I'm going to find out more about compliance, because we keep having our employees run with scissors and they shouldn't do that. And we need a system to tell them, stop it. Like, how would they reach out to you to have a conversation?
A couple easy ways is one, obviously though, my website, www.mworkflow.com, mworkflow.com. Mm-hmm. And also I'm on LinkedIn. So if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, that's a real easy way to get in touch with me. If I see you connect, and I've been trying to keep posting content out there that I think is helpful for folks, again, wanting to serve and help them. So that's a good way to connect with me as well. Or you can ask Fritz. He'll help you.
I know where you live, man. I can find
that guy. Steve is super cool. I really want to talk to him. So
Scuba Steve. Awesome. There you go. Well, it's been a pleasure and a blessing chatting with you again. I always enjoy our time together, man. I miss that, getting coffee at Breadco outside the one day. It almost seems like unbearably cold to do that today, because I'm like, my toes are frozen in this truck. I should have worn slippers, but I do it because I love talking with people and I love talking with you.
I'm glad you asked me to do this. Really, it's kind of a good time.
Yeah. Sound like you were gonna say, I'm glad you got to see me, Fritz.
You're so lucky to be able to see me. And since this is a podcast, you can't see what a fabulous hair day I'm having, but I'm having a fabulous hair day.
He's rocking the pompadour, boys and girls. He's just got a swoop back. Yeah, I've never seen a comb over that complex. I'm joking. I'm kidding.
Hey, it's a comb over that transitions straight into a mullet. I think it's hot.
Nice, man. I love it. You know, that's the cool thing about having an audio only podcast. I mean, you and I can see each other just fine, but then when I push this up, it's going to be like, it's audio only. We can tell the listeners whatever we want, dude.
I know. Tell them
whatever we want. Like, why do you have so many cats? There's like 7 of them walking across your desk. Not really. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I want to fix my allergies.
There we go. Every day you just bury your face, just boom, right into a cat and just like that. And eventually you'll build up a tolerance. Awesome. Exactly. Man. I love it.
Hairball. I'm sorry.
Gross, man. Scrape it up and keep going. Well, excellent, man. Well, I will get some information put into the show notes and get this pushed up soon. And it's been a pleasure talking with you. And sometime soon we need to get together. Let's see if we can make that happen. All right.
Sounds good. Thanks for the opportunity, Fritz.
All right, man. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Did you hear this episode and go, wow, I'm a founder and all my friends keep telling me I should get on a podcast? Would I be a fit? Yes. Yes, you would. Every single person who steps out of their comfort zone to build their dream has an amazing story to share. And this is the platform for you to do that. If you want to talk about your dream, what led you to start your endeavor, what successes you've had or challenges you've been pitted against, this is the podcast for you. So head on over to archdevops.com/podcast to find out how to get on. And also check out our free tip sheets on guesting or even hosting your own podcast. This is Fritz, your host, hoping to meet you on the other side of the hot mic at ArchDevOps.